Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So Matt and I have just walked out of Melbourne Park in the pouring rain, and we are soaked to the skin. But that's all in a good cause, because we are round Catherine's lounge table watching the longest match in history between, which one is it? Jordan Thompson.
I've learned his name. I'm all over it.
Okay, and Fabio Fognini, who are 5-all in the fifth and seem to have had a 28 juice game in order to stay at that point. So we thought what we'd do is record the podcast anyway, and maybe that one will be decided by the time we finish. Another stuff's happened today. Like what?
Well, I was just going to insert there that what you told me about it not just being rain, but dirty rain.
Sounds horrible, yeah. Doesn't it?
Brown rain.
Yes, it was muddy rain coming from the sky. I mean, the theory seemed to be that it might be something to do with the bushfires. And if there was smoke in the air, then that would make sense, I guess. But it has been raining cats and dogs for hours, and was thoroughly miserable. But here we are with beer and chips and.
As a result, my socks are wet.
They really did arrive looking in absolute state, folks. It was a scene.
Yeah. Pretty sure we stink.
And they closed. I've got to not laugh because some feedback from my dad on yesterday's podcast is that it was too much giggling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Dad. So try not to have too much fun, everyone. Stop it.
I'm feeling sufficiently miserable.
Yeah. I'm definitely miserable.
Yeah, one time in my life I've been accused of being too fun.
Too jolly.
Too jolly.
Okay.
They closed the roof on the Rod Laver Arena while they were playing tennis on it.
Yeah.
David, you must have been in the commentary bunker while that was happening.
Yes. They can close that thing pretty quickly, can't they? That was during the Federer match, wasn't it?
Serena.
Was it?
I think, Serena. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, it puts the other slams to shame, really, how quickly they can close that roof on the Rod Laver Arena, as you said, while play is going on as well. And they just finished it off.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So we started, I started my day a good 15 hours ago with Heather Watson against Christina
Back
Pliskova.
Back when you were dry.
Yes. And it was sunny and hot at that point and windy, really windy. That was the first most notable thing of the day. The rain, the dirty rain, the muddy rain feels like a footnote. Today feels like it was wind dominated. And actually the wind contributed to some of the scorelines we saw, I thought, today. For instance, my prediction that I got wrong with Katie McNally in the newsletter, which you can sign up to and find out about other wrong predictions I've made.
Speak for yourself, David.
It's interesting.
It's supposed to be a leveller, isn't it, wind? But it's not. That's such a reductive way to describe the effect of wind.
It just hurts certain players.
Yeah, exactly.
And can suit certain players, I think. I mean,
Andy Murray.
And Nadal always talks about being from an island, Mallorca. And I did wonder whether Heather Watson has had some windy days in Guernsey.
Yeah, she said it is. She said it's very windy in Guernsey. She said it was very windy in Hobart, where she got to the semis.
Mm.
And she was right in her element, she said, today. Whereas she's playing Christina Pliskova, who's really tall, got a massive serve. But, you know, she's happier indoors, frankly.
Big, flat hitters. Both Pliskovas, Burdick hated playing in the wind, didn't he?
Mm.
I mean, Czech players, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Kvitova didn't fancy it at all early on. She managed to get through, but wasn't 100% comfortable out there. And anyway, Heather Watson won, so she's through to play Elise Mertens. What about Naomi Osaka today? Because for the most part, she seemed happy enough, but then there was a little bit of a moment.
Mm. Well, the question I asked her in the press conference was, how did you feel waking up on such a windy day? Because I kind of thought she might be a player who didn't like the wind so much. And classic Osaka, she gave you a kind of answer you weren't expecting. She said, well, it wasn't that windy.
Hold on, was she playing in another city?
I know. She just didn't think it was that bad. She says, compared to other places where we play, she said, I don't want to call out the tournaments, but some of them are really windy, and this just wasn't that bad compared to it.
She was on the Margaret Court Arena, right?
Pretty enclosed.
Which is probably the most sheltered. Mm,
yeah. I think so.
I don't think they have elements in there.
No.
No.
So...
But yeah, she...
It was windy, Naomi, all right?
Yeah, it really was. But yeah, she played well, and I thought it was impressive because what I said the other day about how she's accepting, really, that some matches are going to be difficult and being okay with that, and that's that mindset's particularly important in the wind. And she played well. She did have a lapse in the second set where she got broken, kicked her racket, looked a bit frustrated, but snapped back into gear and won the last four games of the match. And then she had a really weird on-court interview where the interviewer, he had a moment which I sort of always fear, of his poor grasp of mathematics being exposed publicly, where he told Osaka that she can get back to number one this tournament. And she said, I don't think I can. I'm worried about dropping out of the top 10. And of course she can't, because she's defending 2,000 points and Barty's number one is completely safe. Weird moment.
Oh dear. Ash Barty's number one, and she's going to stay there. And she won today. She was pretty comfortable, I think. I mean, her match went by so quickly. I don't really remember anything about it.
Yeah, I snoozed through it.
Right. Okay, Catherine's report.
I was expecting to wake up and see some of it, but it was over.
Right.
The opportunity missed.
The only thing I know about it is that she was. Happy in the corridor when I happened to be walking to the commentary box, and she was walking past Caroline Wozniacki, and they had a high 10.
Well, I did see a lot of Caroline Wozniacki against Stojanovic Ostrzemska. In fact, I watched that back to back once that finished. I was watching on Channel 9 for a lot this afternoon. Once that finished, they bobbed over to Coco Gauff against Sorana Kistea, and those two matches. Back to back, it was probably sort of an hour and a half of just brilliant tennis watching, all the best things about tennis. Wozniacki Ostrzemska had just the incredible contrast of styles that has typified so many of Wozniacki's great matches over the years. I think she won, I think it might even have been six games in a row to win the first set.
She was 5-1 down.
5-1 down.
5-1 down. Won six games in a row to win the first set. And then she was down again.
Three love double break
in the second and came back. And Ostrzemska kept on saving match points. She was serving to stay in it. And I think she saved at least five with really gutsy play. And the commentators were saying, oh, I just want to see Wozniacki go for it a bit more on match point. And I was like, we've literally had a whole career of Wozniacki. That is not what she does. And it will probably, in the end, her ploy will prove to come out on top. And it did. She just did her thing. She just never let it go. She's incredible on the court. I wish I liked her a bit more off the court. I wish I saw what I see on the court off it a bit more. And there was a real moment of rawness. You had this really unique moment of Caroline Wozniacki just being stripped down. You know, she wasn't the celebrity or the gutsy fighter or the, you know, all the various things she's been over the years. She was just a woman that's had a incredible career that knows it's coming to an end, and sort of all the pathos that goes along with that. Just the most fitting. Well, if that turns out to be Wozniacki's last win, so fitting. And Ostrzemska once again exits Melbourne Park in tears for the second year running.
Yes, because the other one was against Serena Williams last year, wasn't it? Couple of things. Caroline Wozniacki, that just the way you've described her victory, that it was everything that her career has made us know her to be. Reminded me of Andy Murray last year.
Just going to say that
in that match that she just gave that snapshot of
dug
who
into
she is.
History, as you said in a line that was used in the resurfacing documentary. Brilliant line. Felt like he just started digging into history, and that's what it felt like with Wozniacki today. And it was really special.
I accidentally get it right every now and again.
She sort of created her own tribute to herself.
And it felt really symbolic and significant for me, based on what she'd said in her pre-tournament press conference, when she was one of several players, as we mentioned in our podcast, who was asked about Caroline Wozniacki, Kim Clijsters coming back, and Caroline Wozniacki was talking about how the game had moved on in the past decade. And Yastremska, to me, felt like the embodiment of the way that tennis, especially women's tennis, has moved on. The fact that Yastremska's just got the speed of shot that Wozniacki just simply hasn't got. And so many players now, like Yastremska, can hit the ball like that. And I thought if Wozniacki were going to lose that match, it would be symbolic because it was kind of a new era coming through. But the fact that she managed to win it was also kind of significant, because it just showed how Wozniacki has always managed to use the best of her game to beat players who've got more in their game than her. So in a way, it was kind of a vintage Wozniacki win in that way.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
We've had some post-match aggro that match. I mean, first of all, we should say that Dani Yastremska took an injury timeout, I think at 7-5, 6-5. Something like that.
But prior to Wozniacki serving for the match.
No, so Yastremska was going to serve to stay in the match.
Right.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And at which point, at the end of the match, when Caroline Wozniacki was asked about that, she said, oh, yeah, she's tried that trick before.
Mm. And it's
just ask Kiki Bertens.
And it's true. She really has a reputation, Yastremska, for doing this repeatedly, and she's not had a long career, and you know, people are already coming up with 5-6 multiple examples of times she's done this. Yeah, as you mentioned, against Kiki Bertens in Zhuhai, I think it was. Not a good reputation to have, it must be said. But then Sasha Bajin came out on Twitter, obviously Yastremska's coach, and said that is, you know, he was really defending her and saying, you don't know, she's injured, but it looks exactly like what she's done in the past of timing the timeout just as she's losing momentum and her opponent's about to win.
Yeah, yeah, he really came out firing, and he was sort of basically saying to all those people talking rubbish about Yastremska, she had an injury, and only those in the coaching part know about it. Well, okay, well, one of the people, Sasha, that was saying it, was Caroline Wozniacki, who you used to work with. So, you know, maybe have a word with her, because she was pretty convinced
about
it. Not sure
they're on speaking terms.
As you said, Catherine, I mean, Wozniacki was pretty punchy about it. Imagine how punchy she would have been if she'd lost.
Yeah. It almost makes me wish she'd lost just for the aggro that would have ensued.
And that's not to say that she isn't injured or wasn't injured. I have no knowledge whatsoever, but she did take that injury timeout at a particular point, and when it happened against Kiki Bertens, she was asked about it, the question was, you seemed frustrated by it, and Bertens said, well, I've played her three times, and three times it's happened. So there's my answer.
I'm worried that you're both coughing after your stint in the dirty rain.
Yeah, we are. But that's how much this means.
Now I'm worried about it. I hadn't made that connection.
it's okay. It's okay. Anyway, so that all happened, and Caroline Wozniacki's career goes on. So well done to her. As you say, then she was followed on, kind of the story then became Coco Gauff, didn't it? Who, from what I understand, wasn't playing that well, and yet she still won against Saronna Kostea. What did you think? I didn't see it.
We joined the match in the, was it deciding set? I only watched the final set of it.
Right.
Long
match, wasn't it?
I can't tell you how she was playing at the start, but I can tell you how she was playing at the end. She was a breakdown, in fact, in the deciding set when we joined it, I think. She was three love down. Yeah, she was three love down in the deciding set. And just her instinctive fighting spirit was Wozniacki-esque. It was completely extraordinary. I'd say her ground strokes maybe weren't firing as brilliantly as they can be, but like you in the previous round, Matt, I was so struck by the weight of her serve, first and second serves. I mean, it's unreal. There's something about the sort of texture of it that
there's a pop.
Absolutely, that even those second serves, you can see they're going through the court with real menace. And she was just the real deal, you know. She was just so complete and not afraid to try things despite how nerve-inducing the scoreline was, you know. We had you were having a chat with Mary Carrillo, who's unfortunately not at this Australian Open, about, you know, the difference between certain top players and players that you fear will never quite be top players. And Mary talked about whimsy, you know, that, and she encapsulated what whimsy is in tennis so brilliantly, didn't she? She talked about this sort of willingness and inclination to just try something because you can and you want to. I mean, obviously, on the other end of that, you've got Zverev's tweener, which is an advert for not whimsy.
He's not really the whimsy type.
No, exactly. But yeah, Coco Gauff is just not afraid to try stuff in gutsy moments, and it's just a joy to behold.
Alexander Zverev. Not whimsical. But he did, Chris Clary pointed out an answer he gave in his press comments that he was impressed with, and I have to say I agree, in reference to this extraordinary amount of money that he was offering if he were to win the tournament, unlikely as that may be, for the bushfire relief. But
he's
just
not the favourite.
No.
That's how he puts it.
I think that's certainly accurate. But it was more the appreciation of just his position and then actually how good he's got it. It wasn't just paying lip service to that. There was a clear understanding. And I really liked the way he said, look, I know it's easy for me to say I don't play for the money because I guess I've got money, is kind of what he was getting at. But I liked the way he talked about how what I want to do is play on these big stadiums and I love tennis. And I just really enjoyed listening to him break it down like that, really.
Yeah, saying an extra... Well, getting $3.5 million or whatever it is for winning the Australian Open wouldn't do anything for how he felt about winning the Australian Open. That's not why he's playing. So, therefore, a far better use of that money would be to go to the relief course.
Yeah. Those are the two biggest matches and stories of the day. In terms of the ones that, for instance, led our bulletins on the radio. But then we've had a couple of epics elsewhere. We've got one going on at the moment, which is in a final set tiebreak, one of those first to teners between Fabio Fognini and Jordan Thompson. I keep wanting to say James Duckworth. Anyway, it's your fault. And there was the match between Grigor Dimitrov and Tommy Paul, which... I can't quite get my head round. It was well over 4 hours. It was Tommy Paul leading 2 sets to love. Dimitrov comes back heroically to 2 sets all. Catherine's just face has just kind of winced at the thought of it. And then Dimitrov got himself into a winning position, serving for the match. Catherine can't look up. Can't look at us when I'm saying this. And then Tommy Paul won.
Well, it's very important for my career that Tommy Paul doesn't become a big thing, because I accidentally just really pissed him off yesterday.
Okay, what did you do?
I was standing in the media area by the lifts where the players, which is just sort of like hub type spot in the media centre.
You've only been here for a day.
Well, yeah, I was stuck in that vortex of seeing lots of people for the first time. and saying all those hellos. And that vortex happened to...
there's a vortex.
present itself by the lift, but in between the lift where the players emerge and the main press conference, or the corridor down to the various press conference rooms and areas. And I was standing with one colleague and friend, and another one was walking down towards us, and I greeted him, you know, with arms open, did a big, you know, hello. Hey, great to see you. I went big on the great to see you. And I hadn't noticed that there was a tennis player sort of cut across the path between me and colleague / friend at that moment. And he turned around and to sort of politely say, oh, you know, well, to see who it was, and sort of opened his mouth as if to say, great. And I... instinctively, and before I had the chance to correct myself, just said, no, not you. And it was Tommy Paul. You've got to stop this because it's too much giggling and my dad will be tuning out.
Sorry, Dad.
Oh. But he gave me a look, and before I had a chance to give a non-instinctive, no, I'm sorry, it's the chap behind you. He'd already checked out of the conversation.
Hawks.
I'm hoping that the fact that I was wearing my glasses will mean that when I cease to be a glasses wearer, unless he's got really good facial recognition, I will be off the hook in a sort of Clark Kent Superman style way.
Or maybe he's listening and you can say...
I really am sorry. It really came out rude. And that was... It was not the intention at all.
Right. Okay. The match was... I actually saw Tommy Paul play tennis for the first time and really take notice of it. I think against Alexander Zverev at the French Open this year. I think it was in the first or the second round, and it was an absolutely cracking match. And he had this way of steering the ball around that I really enjoyed watching. I'd not really seen him before, and just loved the timing on his ground strokes. You said to me, Matt, how taken with him you were. Perhaps you can explain what you saw in that match with Dimitrov, because I didn't see that much of it.
Yeah, I was really struck by how good he made me feel, how much I enjoyed watching him. And I think what really struck me was there were a lot of American male tennis players who play in a very similar style. Jack Sock, Sam Querrey, John Isner, Riley Opelka, they're all pretty much big serve, big forehand. It's sort of one type fits all, it seems, a lot with these American male players at the moment. And I would be really uplifted if I was an American tennis fan watching Tommy Paul today, because his brand of tennis was way more exciting. And I asked him about it in the press conference. I said, you've got a bit of a different style. Do you know why? And he basically said, well, because I grew up on clay.
That's what struck me watching this match at the French Open, how comfortable he looked out there.
Yeah. And he grew up on clay. He said that the...
In America.
In America. The club he went to was 4 outdoor clay courts and 3 indoor clay courts. And he was playing hard court tournaments, but he was only training on clay. And he thinks that really helped develop an all-court game. And he's more complete. His backhand is rock solid. He shovels it like Kyrgios. And his forehand, he can inject pace into it. His serves, you know, solid. And I found him fluid and good to watch. Like you said, he moves the ball around. He's a good mover himself. It was a physical match, lots of dynamic rallies for Dimitrov, who wasn't playing badly, Dimitrov himself. He wasn't quite at his best, but lots of fun rallies, and yeah, I was uplifted by Tommy Paul. He's pretty level-headed, down to earth, quite honest about the fact that he's struggled to make that transition from being a really good junior to being a pro. He said he just wasn't really mentally ready to dedicate himself to the sport in the way that you have to. He was upfront about that, but he says he's there now.
And he referenced in the on-court interview, I've never really had anything like this before. I'm not really used to this.
Yeah.
He was really bowled over just by the occasion, by the moment, and it was quite nice to see that. Just seeing somebody not taking it for granted, yeah. Not blasé about it. This was a massive deal.
And I should say, without wishing to get too carried away, you know, he might struggle in the next round. He's played 9 sets of tennis in 2 days. He played a 4-setter yesterday, 5-setter, 4.5 hour today, and he came into the press conference, which was at the same time as the Serena Williams press conference. And I was waiting for Tommy Paul in room 2, and Tommy Paul came in. It was just me and one other journalist in there. And the moderator said, we're just going to wait 3 minutes or so for Serena's to finish because we think quite a few journalists will want to come in. So we just sat there with Tommy Paul for a bit, and there'd been, I don't know, a minute silence or whatever. And I was thinking it was a bit awkward. So I said, so how are you feeling? And he went, not good.
Just physically?
Physically not good. And his press conference was at about 10 p.m. and his match finished around 7.
Wow. So it's generally an indicator that there's been 2 hours of massage.
Yeah.
To get them able to walk far enough to get to the press
conference. Contorting bodies to try to stop getting cramp and stuff like that.
And he's playing doubles tomorrow. So God knows what shape he's going to be in.
Who's his doubles partner?
Fritz.
Who's playing singles tomorrow also.
Yeah, and Fritz was in his box, and Fritz was who Tommy Paul beat in the French Open Junior final of 2015, I think. So just an indicator there that Fritz has really made that transition to top 30 that Paul hasn't yet. But game-wise, I was really more impressed with Paul.
That's exciting. Very interesting, yeah. When we talked about this subject, your face fell partly out of the excruciating embarrassment of your encounter with Tommy Paul, but also because it was Grigor Dimitrov, I think, as well. And he does break your heart, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, feel it.
Because he is, we talked about it the other night, he's a lovely guy, and he tried so hard today. He fought his heart out for 4.5 hours. Everybody loves him who watches him play, and he couldn't get over the line. And it was fair play. I mean, Tommy Paul deserved the win in the end, but he does make you feel for him.
And he's never come back to win a match from 2 sets down.
Is that right?
This was his 20th attempt, and he got to within 2 points of doing it.
Which is surprising, given how fit he is.
Yeah. Mm.
He never looks tired, really, does he?
I think he's come close a couple of times, but this was the closest he's ever come to pulling that off, but he didn't.
How did Serena Williams look to you today?
Imperious.
For a set and a bit. And then it got a bit dicey, didn't it, in the middle of that second set?
I popped into the Serena press conference before the Tommy Paul one and just caught a little bit of what she was saying. And she said that at the start of that second set was the worst she's played all year. But the way she was able to suddenly turn it around was really encouraging. And she suddenly, just that ability to kind of bend matches to the way she wants them to go when she's at her best. And she suddenly got loud and got intense and got in her opponent's face.
It was really cool that period of the match because Tamara Zidancic, is that correct? She is so quick around the court. I was taken by her movement, and she started to play some pretty inspirational shots as well that I feel as though Serena, over the last year and a half, when things have, you know, she hasn't played that much and she's had moments in matches where she's started to fret a little bit and get rattled. And it could have happened because she was having to withstand a lot of irritation, really, in the middle of that second set. And as you say, she suddenly started to get loud and just forced the match her way.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was so impressed by, really, that she prevented Zidancic from getting on a real roll. And she just sort of snuffed it out and imposed herself and didn't show any hints of that. You know, she can start, she has every now and then done that pained Serena Williams expression, you know, that just agonized how can this person be playing this well against me type expression. And that could have started happening, and she just wasn't having it. She wasn't letting that happen today.
That is something really interesting, because Serena always says that she feels like she has to play the best version of an opponent. She feels like they always play up against her. And I think that does happen a lot of the time. I do think there's certainly been a lot of occasions where some players have kind of cowered in the situation and shrunk. So I don't think it works. That's necessarily true all the time. But today it definitely was true. She was playing an opponent who was playing at her absolute best. And as you said, for her to not get frustrated by that was, and kind of use it as fuel in a way, was what was so impressive about her.
Novak Djokovic today lost, I think, just seven games, against Tatsuma Ito, and now plays Yoshihito Nishioka, who beat Dan Evans today in straight sets. Looked very good today, Djokovic. Federer looked extravagantly good, I thought. I don't know what you thought.
I went out for the first set of that, first set and a half, and my word, Federer started well. He was so clean, so sharp, basically zero shanking, and just everything coming out the middle of his strings. And I think he broke, who was he playing, Krajinovic in the second game, just as he'd broken Steve Johnson in his first service game. And once he's off to a quick start, you kind of just think it's over, really. He was just in that kind of mood. It was a really sort of pleasing on the eye thrashing, because Federer was doing everything that he does when he's at his best, just hitting backhand winners off his toes. And
there was whimsy.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Yeah, he admitted afterwards that he felt sorry for Krajinovic.
Like when he laughed at Berrettini.
His kids laughed at him as well, yeah.
Admittedly, I mean, part of that was because he had a day off yesterday and Krajinovic played five sets and was absolutely out on his feet.
Yeah, well, that is a point that was made by... I'm trying to make things serious now because you started laughing about something and I've got my dad ringing in my ears. Make things serious. A point made by a journalist colleague of ours, Stephanie Miles, on Twitter in response to somebody having a bit of a pop at Hubert Hurkacz for apparently he looked like he was on the brink, at least considering retiring in his match against John Millman. Ended up losing in three sets. He did get to the end. But Hubert Hurkacz played five sets yesterday in a match that was originally scheduled for Monday, got rained off. He hung around till 10:30 p.m. On Monday before that match was cancelled. Had to come back and play first on Tuesday, played five sets, and then had to come back and play on Wednesday. And that is a heck of an ask for any player. And this person on Twitter was saying it's shameful that he's thinking of packing it in just because he's tired. You know, just ask Federer, Nadal. Djokovic has retired a few more times, but latterly, you know, not much at all. Just ask any of those top guys how often they've retired in matches. And of course, that would never happen to them. That sequence of events would never happen to Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal because they'll always be scheduled on the top courts, which, well, Philippe Chatrier aside, because they're taking their sweet time in France, will always have a roof and they'll always, by and large, roughly know their start time, etc., etc. Those scenarios don't happen to those top guys. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not saying they've not earned that. It's just a fact. They get the completely sweet end of the deal.
Yeah. John Millman.
John Millman next, who Federer said that when he played him in New York, he almost passed out.
Yeah.
And which is true, I think. I mean, that's the most extraordinary image I think we've probably ever seen of Federer. Yeah.
It's the first time you've looked at him look really uncomfortably sweaty and as though his power is just draining away in front of your very eyes, and his opponent was getting stronger and fitter and just took over.
And I think it was shortly after Federer had signed with Uniqlo, wasn't it? And people were saying, oh God, Uniqlo need to create a shirt that is better in dealing with the sweat.
I don't breathable.
Think it was, yeah, and I mean, maybe that was
there is no fabric that breathable.
Yeah. It was just, he was just wilting in those conditions. And I think he used the phrase, I was just glad to get off the court. I was just glad it was over when it was done. But yeah, Millman has obviously beaten Federer in the past, but Federer's draw has massively opened up with Dimitrov going out today, who obviously beat him at the last slam. Berrettini was the highest seed in Federer's quarter. He's gone. He lost in five to Tennis Sangrin. And suddenly we're in a situation where Federer's got no top 40 players before the quarterfinals.
Shapovalov out.
Shapovalov has already gone. So he's you know, you're penciling Federer in for the semis already, to be honest. He was asked in his press conference whether he's worried about having kind of easy matches, whether he wants a bit of a test, and he said, no, I prefer to be undercooked than overcooked, which incidentally does not apply to the vegetables in the media centre, which are far too...
Well, no, it does. Those vegetables do prefer to be undercooked. Yeah, well, certainly, but that's how the chef prefers
them. Yeah, but they shouldn't be.
Why?
Matt left a whole plate of vegetables yesterday.
No. They're
in disgust.
They're supposed to be
the
like
chap
that.
Came around and said, are these done? And Matt said, yes, they are. Take them away. They're basically crudité.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Not if they're advertised as cooked veg.
Cooked veg. They're just not
cooked. The stalks on the broccoli are inedible.
You need to come to Chef Law's course.
I don't mind al dente. I quite like al dente. But inedible broccoli stalks, it's not. I'm not having it.
Okay, we'll carry on this later. John Millman, can he win? How does he win?
The tournament.
Can he beat Federer? Oh. Can he win the tournament?
What's the forecast for Friday?
Pass.
I don't know.
He needs it to be...
uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, yeah. He needs it to be an entirely physical battle. He can't beat him in tennis terms.
Who are the crowd going to be on for?
Federer.
John Millman is so Aussie, though. He's so...
But he admitted himself...
perfectly Aussie.
He admitted himself he's going to be on Rod Laver Arena. A lot of that stadium is, you know, there's corporate seats in there. If you're playing Federer on Rod Laver Arena, he's probably not going to have the support. He said, you know, stick it out on Melbourne Arena. That would help me, where there's ground pass holders. I think Federer will have the support.
I think you could... If you wanted to create a little side business, you could make some of those half and half scarves.
Yes,
you'd sell out.
Who there?
Even though they're absolutely
awful.
If it was Kyrgios Federer, who would have the support?
Oh, Federer.
Federer, I think.
Unless it was on Melbourne Arena.
So there's nobody. There's nobody.
I don't think so.
Ash Barty.
I mean, look. I mean, I know it's a different. Yeah, Ash Barty. Yeah, literally, Ash Barty. I think would have more support than Federer. But I mean, it's the same on pretty much every main stadium in tennis. I mean, I remember those times he's played Murray at Wimbledon.
For some reason, I think of it as least so here of the four slams. That might be baseless. Evidently.
I would say it's baseless.
I think that's baseless, yeah.
Yes, so that's what's happened today. Anything else?
We didn't mention while we were discussing their second round matches that Goff now plays Osaka.
Oh.
Mm. For the second slam in a row in
last
the third round.
Osaka won when we were in the pub and we got it all wrong, didn't we? I was four beers low that night and I was trying to ascertain what was being said without being able to hear any of it and I was drunk. So
it's great.
So I said what I thought and then I got 100 bazillion messages telling me I'd got it completely wrong and that maybe I should turn the sound on next time.
We had subtitles, to be fair. We weren't flying completely blind.
I could not read those subtitles. do you think the result could be any different? I mean, that was a pretty comfortable win from Osaka, wasn't it, that night?
Yeah. Result, no. I think Osaka will still win. I expect it to be closer. I think it was something like 3-1 or 1-3, something like that in New York. And I think it will be closer, but arguably Osaka's playing better than she was when she was at the US Open. We've talked about how stressed she was at that tournament. She seems a lot freer now. I do expect Osaka to have too much.
The stadium announcer doing the interviews on the Melbourne Arena, which is where Coco Gauff played today, he did a perfectly good interview with her after the match. But the last question was about, well, you play Osaka next. And the crowd went, ooh, which is great. That sort of raw reaction to that matchup. And hopefully a matchup that we'll be seeing for the next decade and more. And so Coco Gauff gave her answer about, yeah, we played New York, it's going to be great, I'm really excited. And then the stadium announcer said, oh, and you've had so much support on the Melbourne Arena today, would you like to play back here again? Incidentally, that is the smallest Grand Slam stadium court she's ever played on. She's never played on a third court before. And she sort of awkwardly said, yeah, sure, if I get support like this, I'd love to play out here. But her tone of voice said, I definitely know that match is going to be on Rod Laver Arena, which was, it was sort of, she handled it so well.
She handles everything well.
Yeah.
And on the subject of Rod Laver Arena, Garbiñe Muguruza against Ayla Tomljanovic to start tomorrow. That could go either way.
Matt and I were not convinced by Muguruza a couple of days ago.
No. Has anybody gone for that? Is an upset tomorrow in the newsletter?
No. Still time to change your mind.
I've already popped my...
I hovered over it.
Okay.
But I've gone for Taylor Townsend because I can't distinguish my heart from my head.
Right. Get yourself on the newsletter, folks, if you want to know every day what we've gone for in our daily predictions against Melanie Bowes, who's our foe for this fortnight. Laura Sigmund against Karen Pliskova.
Yeah.
Everybody's my enemy in predictions. And then we've got Zverev against Gerasimov, who I don't know much about. Igor Gerasimov.
Did he play for Bulgaria in the ATP Cup?
I want to say yes. I think he did. It does ring a bell. Anyway, he's playing against Alexander Zverev on Rod Laver Arena. Evening session, Harriet Dart against Simona Halep. So that's a great opportunity for her. Hopefully it goes.
I mean, last time she was
that
on that court.
That is the best possible way of looking at it.
She lost 6-love, 6-love last time against Maria Sharapova a year ago. I think she'll do all right this time. You know, it's players who blast her off
I think
the court
she'll win games.
Yeah, so do I. That's enough. She's already into the second round. And then Rafael Nadal against Federica Del Bonis. I went for Yelena Ostapenko to beat Belinda Bencic, I think.
Did you?
Yeah, which is Margaret Court Arena.
And you also have Bencic in your quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you've got both, called hedging, sort of.
I've forgot that. Okay. Then Medvedev against Martinez, and Kerber's playing, and Wawrinka against Seppi. Svitolina, Vekic, Corne.
Isn't Svitolina playing somebody? I remember putting an asterisk by Svitolina when
Lauren Davis, she's playing. Nick
Lauren
Kyrgios.
Davis had match points against Halep here a couple of years ago.
Do you know, I very nearly picked Gilles Simon to beat Nick Kyrgios.
There is a world in which that... There's several worlds in which that happens. But there's also a world in which Kyrgios just serves bombs for an hour and a half and beats him in straight sets.
Imagine the aggro between Danielle Collins and Yulia Putintseva.
Oh, I'm going to go and watch
just
that.
Just imagine that.
That's going to be great.
One of us needs to go and watch just that.
Yes.
Well, when's that on?
They've put it out the way because it's probably, you know.
Is it in the is the court number in the 20s?
It's definitely in the teens.
Okay.
In fact, I can't even see it. I think they've not listed it.
They're doing a lot of scrolling.
It's a little bit like a sort of 18 films certificate, you know, just put it out the way because anything can happen. So that's all tomorrow. And we've been the Tennis Podcast and we have mascots. One of them is Crumble for the Australian Open, the lovely Crumble.
Carol Kirkwood's a fan.
Yeah, Carol Kirkwood from BBC Breakfast fame said what a cutie, and quite right too. And we have Butler, who's our year-long mascot here on the Tennis Podcast. Tell your friends, tell everybody no. Tell everybody you know. Tell random strangers in the street. Tell people that you just see of a morning when you're de-icing your car, when you're doing the school run. If you think that person looks like a tennis fan or just a potential Tennis Podcast fan, get them to listen to this show. Also, leave us an iTunes review because at the moment we've been spending most of the day ranked number 4 in the country out of all sports podcasts on iTunes, which is a record for us. So leave us a review on there and tell everybody how amazing we are. Not that I'm sort of trying to big myself up or anything.
He's dried off and he's back to full jolliness, folks.
I did feel a bit glum when I walked in. That's the most...
You both looked... I wasn't expecting... You hadn't told me what the conditions were like out there. It was really a sight.
You could have looked out of the window. I mean, it was...
It was dark.
You knew the roof was closed on Margaret Court. That was a bit of a giveaway.
I haven't been that wet in a long time.
Yeah, David's pockets were wet.
Yeah. So, anyway, I've cheered up now.
It's a sight. I can't get out of my...
I've had 2/3 of a bottle of beer and I've had a 45-minute chat with my mates on the podcast and I'm all right. So, we'll be back tomorrow and every day of the Australian Open. Anything else?
Would you like me to do some shout-outs?
Go on then. Yes, people that have backed our Kickstarter and enabled you to be here.
Well, I have two today because I... rather forgot to look them up earlier, so I was rushing to look them up before we recorded. But yes, thank you to Helena Fotak.
Yeah, friend of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She is.
How cool.
In fact, she's living in my house at the moment.
Oh, yeah, really?
She's a good friend of my wife. So there we are. Right. I didn't look these ones up, folks. Matt just picked them out.
Unbelievable.
She's back the podcast.
What about Will Ford? Do we know him?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Is he living in your home at the moment?
He's living in your house.
Right, Will.
There's 1,400 people on that Kickstarter list that I was scrolling through, and I picked out the one that's living in your house. Amazing.
Amazing. And Will, thanks for your support, Will. You can live in my house in about 20 years' time. It's fine. And we will be back with another one of these tomorrow when we'll be ready to rumble because I won't have been absolutely soaked on my way home. Although apparently it is going to rain all day long. There's going to be no play tomorrow.
It's forecast awful for tomorrow.
Yeah, terrible. Terrible.
Right.
So, yeah.
So more advantage for the top players.
Yeah.
So you lot are coming around my house tomorrow, all right?
Done.
I'm not doing this again.
Apparently you'll let anyone stay in your house.
That's all right. See you tomorrow, folks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.